And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
All right, Johnny Donovan, thank you very much for the introduction once again. Yes, the weekly get-together right here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. I thought you were going to work me off right away, John, by complaining about the little bit of snow we had.
Well, it's right here on the page. You know, you always like to take credit for the good stuff. Now, what's the deal with the cold weather?
I guarantee you that warmer weather is coming.
You absolutely promise, guarantee, 100%.
Absolutely guarantee, promise. We will be able to swim outside and run around and have a great time. The school season will end, except for those kids that will need some extra help in summer school. The rest of us will take a vacation occasionally. And this weekend will be a nice, quiet weekend. We have Easter, Good Friday today, Easter on Sunday. We're in the middle of Passover, so it's a religious and a nice time for lots of people.
Families getting together and all sorts of things. The Easter Bunny, however, is going to need an extra jacket.
The Easter Bunny often needs an extra jacket. Easter does come early many years, and we've had, I remember snowstorms on Easter.
Absolutely. So do I. In fact, my birthday is this weekend, and I can remember as a youngster snow many, many times.
John, if I had known that, I would tell you an expensive returnable gift would be in the mail. Unfortunately, it's too late. Next year.
What a shame, huh? All right, let's get down to it. Speaking of anniversaries, you've got, a 1,000 days left in your gig here in New York City, and I understand that, or tell me what we can expect from the Bloomberg administration.
Well, we have 1,000 days left to go. And, you know, most administrations don't have the luxury of knowing that they have a specific time. I can't run for re-election. So we have to finish up at midnight on December 31st, 2009, and that's 1,000 days from now. And what I did yesterday is I called in all of our 40-odd commissioners and senior staff and deputy mayors and said, look, in other places, other times, other groups, when they have a deadline like this, they sort of relax and try to just make sure they don't make any mistakes between now and the end. And I think that that's the wrong thing for us to do. We were elected to work for all the second 4 years, and that's what we're going to do. And so I tried to outline four key things that we're going to really focus on. One is strengthening accountability, because I think that really is one of the hallmarks of our administration. And if we can improve transparency and customer service and results, we really can do more. And if the public knows what the government can do for them, how to access, that's nyc.gov, that's 311. If the city knows what the public needs, that's exactly the other side of the same systems. If we publish all the numbers so the public knows what goes well and what goes poorly. And, you know, in the past, a lot of organizations, whether in government or business, don't put out the bad numbers. They only put out the good numbers. Well, nobody has all good numbers, and it is frustrating when the press only focuses on the handful of things that aren't finished or don't work or maybe never will work. But you got to do everything. So we're focusing on strengthening our accountability and making sure that the systems are in place so that future administrations will have the luxury and the public can hold their feet to the fire to really deliver services. The second thing I outlined to all of the commissioners was that we want to continue innovation. We've always tried to find new ways to address poverty or affordable housing or schools or many of the old line problems that people just sort of threw their hands up and lived with, and we've not been willing to do that. Now, we're not going to solve all of these, but we've tried some new things. We're going to keep trying new things, and I want every agency to tell me, and I'm going to start calling them and bugging them, what new things can we do? What things have we been unwilling to try, afraid to try? For example, our conditional cash transfers. I don't know if it's going to work, but if we didn't try it, we'll never know. Third thing is making sure that we have management depth. You know, as you get to near the end, you can see somebody takes a job in another field or for another part of government or something. And at that time, it's really hard to attract new people to come into government when you only have a short period of time. So I want to make sure that every agency has a bench, some backups that they can go to that can really do the job, so the public doesn't have to worry that near the end you'll have a bunch of agencies that are really unmanaged. And I think we have the people. I just want to sit down with every manager and say, okay, who would it be? I might not pick them, but who would you suggest? And the last thing is fiscal responsibility. In government, there's often a tendency to give away as many things as you can at the very end and say, well, the next administration can figure out how to pay for it. I'm determined that we leave the city in good fiscal shape for whoever succeeds us. So we're going to really focus in the next 1,000 days on controlling our expenses and maximizing our revenues, and doing things more efficiently, and just making sure that everything is, you know, the ways we hope that, somebody leave it for us. So whether it's poverty or our Plan YC, which is our 25-year program of what we're going to do down the road, what city needs are down the road, or going after illegal guns or affordable housing or keep improving education. We're not going to solve all the problems, but we're determined to at least try.
All right. An example of being the good businessman that you are, let me ask you this question. You have asked your commissioners to do these four things and set certain goals. How about personal goals?
I've started to focus a little bit on what I'll do next. As you know, I bought a building to put my foundation in, and we've started to add a handful of people. It won't really build up for the next couple of years, but the amount of money I'm going to focus on giving away is starting to ramp up. And I'm looking forward to my next career. It'll be very different, a lot of fun. But this one, I've had the most wonderful 5 years. I'll have the most wonderful 8 years of my life. But the 8 years before that were what I thought were the most wonderful ones, and I hope the 8 years after these 8 years will be even better.
All right. I've got to ask you, is the door still open for the presidency? You still looking at that?
The presidency of the Bloomberg Foundation has already been taken by Patty Harris, so I missed out on that one.
You are awful. Okay, very good. Let me ask you for an example of the innovation. Do you have something in mind?
We have a lot of things. For just in poverty, for example, we said, look, everybody says you can't do anything about it. All you have to do is you just keep throwing money at the same old ways. We've tried new things. Some have worked. Some have been popular. Some not. And the conditional cash transfers are one of the things that we're trying to do. We're trying to find ways to engage kids and get them back into school. Kids who've dropped out, who are, sort of young adults now, if they don't have an education, they're not going to be able to get a job. So trying to change in schools, have theme schools, to have programs for GEDs, kids that didn't graduate, let's get them back and see if we can do it. Trying to work with the unions to open up the construction industry. Those are all poverty kinds of things. Police department, we announced yesterday, we finally found a site. For decades, they've been looking to replace the old police academy, which was opened in 1964 when I graduated college. It was designed for a police department half our size and without all the technology that we have today. So yesterday we announced we found a location in College Point. It's going to be a spectacular place that will really let us not only train new recruits but train the existing police officers using all technology so they can have simulations and see what to do in different kinds of emergencies. We're trying to have a new system to pull together fire and police and the Office of Emergency Management with 911 to streamline that system and have a backup for our existing 911 place. So there are a lot of these things, and you pick the area and I'll give you some things.
All right, will the police academy, do you think, be completed before you leave office?
No, but I hope to have a groundbreaking before then. It will take a couple of years to go through the Uniform Land Use Program, ULURP, and then we'll have a groundbreaking. We'll put out RFPs. We'll get a developer. Somebody will come in with the city Department of Design Construction or have to hire a construction firm. I think you'd be lucky to have the place up and going in 2004, thereabouts. But at least we'll get it done, and the budget will have the money in it, and the approvals will all be done before we go, and a contractor, I hope, selected and contract signed. so that whoever succeeds us can focus on other things, because there are a lot of things that are still going to have to be done after we finish. But I want to get as much done now so the next person who is the mayor and their administration has a chance to do more things.
All right, before we go to the first break here, let me ask you one more question along these lines. You talk about management depth. Do you worry about your replacement, and are you in any way, shape, or form doing anything to kind of direct that in a way you think is appropriate?
Well, I think that the public will have a number of people to pick from. I hope so, because I think that's good for democracy. As you know, I've always thought nonpartisan elections would make more sense, and I tried to get that passed and didn't. But I think that anybody that wants to run should get out there and start learning the issues and tell people how they will face the real issues. The only thing I would really like to add to the dialogue is I would like to make sure that when people say they want to run for mayor or for anything else, and I'd really like to focus, have my foundation focus on this down the road, that the public finds a ways to get them on the record, not just to say I'm in favor of motherhood and apple pie, but how are you going to protect mothers, and how are you going to make apple pies, and where's the money going to come from, and where are you going to store them, and what happens if it doesn't work? So the public really can understand whether those people seeking office, whether it's for mayor or governor or president, whether it's in the legislature or the executive branch or the judicial branch where they have elected judges, the public will know whether these people really understand the issues, whether they have real concrete plans, not just say they're in favor of this and that, but, you know, they'll worry about how to pay for it down the road. And then the public can hold their feet to the fire and say, you said this, that you would do it, and this is how you're going to pay for it. Now, where is it? I think that's what good government's all about.
And to that point, on the national basis, this consolidation of primary dates to February 5th, I think, is a miserable idea because it really eliminates a lot of that opportunity.
Well, you know, it cuts both ways, and I have mixed emotions about it. I was asked recently, and I said, I guess on balance, I'm in favor of moving New York's up, although you could easily convince me that it's not a great idea. The trouble is you have a couple of small primaries that are not really very representative, and they, because of the focus of the press, they have a disproportionate impact on who the candidates are that get to the bigger states. I think small states should have representation, but proportionally to the amount of people they have and compared to the big states. And the argument with New York is by the time you get to New York, it's already picked. Now, this year, because you have so many primaries together, or it looks like you will, it may very well be that where you have two or three candidates in each of the two major parties, you won't have a decision by then. Quite the contrary, those who wait will, the primaries that come later will have an even greater impact because all of the votes will be split. And maybe it'll work out that way. Or maybe one person will run away with it day one on February 5th and the rest of them are meaningless. I think, however, it should be set by the federal government. We should come up with a policy from a federal point of view and not let each state do it because there's no coordination and nobody's focusing on what's good for the public and good for the country in national elections. They're only focusing on what's good for the state.
And good for the outcome, the ultimate outcome of the choosing of the individual. You're absolutely right. Mr. Mayor, we've run real long here. Let me take a break. You sip on your coffee. We're coming right back at 77 WABC. Another hour with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show. It is a Friday. Mr. Mayor, we went a bit long, so this segment's going to be shorter than normal. Let me go back real fast and touch on the police department. We talked about the new academy that is in the planning and will be built. Again this week, a number of articles and comments from Ray Kelly, the commissioner, about recruiting, about pay, about low passing grades for the sergeant's tests. I'm getting the impression that Ray Kelly is very concerned about the future of his department. True
or false? Well, I think Ray is concerned and I'm concerned. What happened was the PBA refused to negotiate. It's really the only union that's done that for, I guess, internal political reasons. I don't really know. You'll have to talk to them. They had a chance with an arbitrator to force the arbitration to do what they call sell the unborn. They reduced the compensation for new recruits dramatically and took that money plus some more city money and paid the officers who had more longevity in the departments even more than they would have otherwise got. That made it very difficult for every other union in the city to go afterwards, because most of the unions, or a lot of them, don't have the turnover where they could do that. It does make recruiting a lot harder. We did come to an agreement recently with the Uniform Firefighters Association, the UFA, which is in the process of going through their approval process by all of the members, and I think it'll probably get approved, that would fix that and raise the starting salaries for new fire officers by over $10,000 a year. The PBA still refuses to talk whatsoever. They think that if they go to arbitration again, they don't care about whether it's good for the department. They think that they can do better. And the truth of the matter is, no arbitrator is going to give them anything different than everybody else. We've had pattern bargaining for 100 years in this city. It's going to continue. And the city has really come up with a lot more money, as much as it possibly can. And in fact, if you take a look down the road, while we have revenues better than our expenses at the moment, the future, 2009 and 2010, that's not the forecast. And so it's going to be even harder to get raises down the road if they don't get them now. I don't know what's going to happen. We just aren't going to have the money. But the problem is, it's hard to recruit people when they're going to make more money, but they're not going to get it for the next 5 years, and Ray's right about that. And we're trying to fix it, but we can't do anything different with the police department than with everything else. All these unions have to go together. We have 300,000 dedicated municipal employees in this city. I don't think the police officers are being well served by their union. Those who have less than 5 years seniority aren't getting well paid, and it's because of their union. And we've given them two or three offers to fix it literally overnight. They could get big paychecks retroactively, and for some reason or other, the union for internal politics just doesn't want to help their members.
All right, let me ask you this question. It was reported that 3,866 officers took the test, the sergeant's test. Only 255 passed that test. That's only 8%, means 92% did not pass it. Are because of what you were just talking about, are we finding
Two issues.
Less qualified candidates?
I hope not. I think it shows the high standards of our police department.
You wouldn't consider changing that, easing those standards out?
We want the best, and we want the best trained police officers. The public has a right to that, and that's exactly what Ray Kelly and the mayor will deliver. We're not going to make any compromises in quality and of the people or in the training that they get. Everybody has a right to be treated with respect and professionally, and know that the best that is possible to put out in the street is what the NYPD consistently has done over the years and will continue to do. The problem with the sergeant's test at the moment is, number one, less people are taking it, because with all of the monies and the police officers going to the more senior officers, the differential between being an officer and being a sergeant is less, and perhaps some people say, well, I don't want the extra responsibility, so fewer people are taking it. And I can't quite explain why the pass rate is down a little bit, but, you know, it just goes to show you. Get back to your books, study more. This is a phenomenal job. You have a chance to change the world and protect your family and my family and the public. And hopefully we'll fix that.
Are you concerned that when you go out into the suburban counties, Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, New Jersey, where, you know, $90,000, $100,000 a year is not unusual, that people are going there rather than into New York?
A handful of people do go, but remember, those police departments are relatively small, so they couldn't absorb very many people. And if they pay so well, people that get there aren't going to retire. So this business that everybody's leaving for these other police departments is just a bunch of PR, and it really doesn't make any sense if you think about it. We do lose a handful. I'm sorry we lose them. Some people want to live in the suburbs and work close to home. Some people want a quieter life. There's no question it's easier to be a police officer outside of the NYPD than in. The NYPD is the most demanding police department in the world. That's why it's the best. And the police officers here face challenges that they don't anyplace else, and that's why they're so proud, and that's why they do such a good job. And, you know, we have 38,000 on the streets that protect the city. Crime rate keeps coming down. Our murder rate this year, John, is down 30%. It's not easy to do that. It's dangerous, and it's hard and challenging. That's, if you want to be the best, you work with the NYPD. So going to the suburbs isn't really that much of a problem. They talk about it. What's more, incidentally, take a look at the suburbs. They're starting to wake up. They can't afford this. They're paying salaries that they just don't have the money for. People are screaming about taxes out there. Where do they think their taxes go?
Yeah, Swazi out in Nassau, having lived there myself, they're through the roof, and he's been trying for years now to get something done.
Well, you keep giving away the store. You know, the truth of the matter is administrations have to balance the needs to pay a workforce that you want to pay well-paid, attract the best, be dedicated, focus on their job rather than how they're going to feed their family. And at the same time, you have to deal with the fact that for better or worse, the taxpayers just don't want to pay anymore, and there isn't a free lunch.
Yeah, no free lunches at all, and that's why I've got to take another break, Mr. Mayor. We'll be coming right back here on the half hour. We start off WABC. John Gambling right here at 77 WABC with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It will be your turn at the end of the program to ask the questions. 1-800-848-WABC if you want to get in line. 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, you really got the veto pen going here. Last week it was the pedal cabs, and now you got aluminum bats in your sights.
Well, I don't know whether aluminum bats are more dangerous or less. I've had professional baseball players call me, telling me both sides, and I don't see any science that says nobody's got a machine that really measures it, so it's all sort of in the hands of those who watch and use their judgment. I don't think it should be the government to decide. I don't know whether, if I were a parent, I would want my child playing with an aluminum bat. If I was running a little league, I don't know whether I'd want aluminum or wood. But that's up to the leagues to decide and up to the parents and the schools to decide, I think, not the government. Because the government doesn't have real data to know one way or another. If the government knows something for sure is dangerous, then you can make the case, and it can't be every place. There's a limit to how much government can protect everybody. People have to be responsible for their own lives as well. But, you know, for example, with smoking. We know this. There's no question of the science. You can question whether government should be involved, but in that case, we know the science. In the case of aluminum bats, there isn't scientific data to show it, so I don't think the government should be involved. And, you know, if the little leagues, a lot of the little leagues want to have aluminum bats. There are some professionals who don't like aluminum bats. Simply, one of the arguments I heard, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, I understand why they have it, but it's something the government certainly shouldn't get involved. The professionals like the kids playing with wooden bats because when they're scouting them for the major leagues or for the minor leagues, where they do use only wooden bats, they want to see how the kids perform with wooden bats. Well, I know why that's in their commercial interest, but the government shouldn't be involved in that. The government should only get involved if it's a safety issue. And there, as I said, there's no real data.
Well, I bet you never thought when you got this job you'd be worrying about aluminum bats.
There are a lot of things that I never thought I'd get. Some of them we can't even talk about on the air.
I'm sure. One thing we can't, I found this interesting, and I said to myself, I can't wait to get your reaction on this week. Study about the cost of living in the city of New York, family of four, $75,000 to $135,000. Which, if those numbers are correct, and you assume they are for just the moment, makes it almost impossible, doesn't it, for a municipal worker, for example, middle class, to live in New York?
Well, it is true in this country that today a two breadwinner family lives about as well, all things being adjusted for inflation and different technologies and things that are available. A two income family lives as well as a one income family used to live. When I was a kid, I knew only one kid, one friend of mine who was mother and father both worked. It just when I was growing up, I was born in 1942, and so, you know, in the late 40s, early 50s, you did not have two breadwinners. The typical family, the father went out and worked, and the mother stayed at home, and there were very few families that didn't have both a mother and father. We live in a very different world. There are a lot of kids who aren't lucky enough to have two parents at home, and in many cases, both parents do work. Now, you know, a municipal worker today, if two people are municipal workers, they have a lot of benefits, which you should count into their compensation. for down the road. Private sector, people have had to save for their pension funds. Municipal workers typically do better. Not every place, but in the city they certainly do well. So, you know, that's another trade-off. But there's no question you can't live on Park Avenue in the 60s and 70s and in the 80s if you are a municipal worker. On the other hand, take a look at what's happening in this city. We have more people living in this city than ever before. Our population's a record high. It keeps growing. So a lot of people come here and they may say, well, I can't afford as many things. I can't afford as big a house or as many vacations as if I lived outside the city. But I love the city and the vitality and the pace and the diversity, and that's a trade-off. Long term, this country has some real problems, which I've started to think about a little bit more, and that there is a bigger gap between those with good educations and those without. That's probably going to continue, unfortunately or fortunately, but it's something we have to adjust to. But the world is changing. We are not going to, no matter how much protectionists want to do it, we're not going to keep those jobs where you don't have to have a good education here in this country. They're going to leave this country, and there's no ways you can stop them. And long term, we don't even want to stop them. It's not good. What we have to do is to get everybody an education. And that's why when I came into office, I said, number one priority, education. We've given our teachers a 43% raise. And what's happened? School graduation rates are up, and gaps based on ethnicity and testing are down, and total test scores in math and English are up. Do we have a long way to go? Absolutely. But we can't play politics with our school system, and we can't run the school system for those people who work in it. We've got to run it for the kids. And you can see exactly why. It's this difference between those who have a good education, who are making more, and those who don't, who are falling behind.
All right, now that you've brought it up, let's talk about the state budget as it relates to monies for New York City and schools. Up what, like $1.7 billion, I think, something like that?
You know, my numbers are rough, but in the last 5 years, New York City taxpayers have put about $3.5 billion annually. That's billion with a B. It's a lot of money. Every single year, we've ramped it up so we now put $3.5 billion more annually into the school system, and we've committed to do roughly another $2 billion, ramping up to that over the next few years. So there'll be $5.5 billion more that the city taxpayers are putting into the New York City school system. The city taxpayers are reaching into their pocket because they understand whether they have kids in the public schools or not, it is the kids who go through our public schools who are going to be the voters of tomorrow, who are going to be the people that pay for Social Security for all of us tomorrow. They're the people on the streets tomorrow. It is in everybody's interest to have a good public school system. Now, at the same time, the state in the last 5 years has increased their aid to New York City by roughly $1.5 billion annually, and the governor's budget calls for $1.7, $2 billion, something like that. Let's say another couple billion. So they will, over the same period, have increased the state aid to New York City, which, keep in mind, remember, we generate an awful lot of the tax revenue, so in some senses we're just getting our own money back. But nevertheless, the state will have increased it by $3.5 billion, while we will have increased it by $5.5 billion. And we're going to use that money for to go and to keep attracting the best teachers and help new programs. We need aid for kids who really have special needs. We have to have more personalized aid. We have to have more training of our teachers. There's an awful lot of things that we can use this money for.
All right, charter schools. I know there are more coming New York City way.
For the life of me, I cannot understand why anybody would be against charter schools. The objection seems to come from the teachers union. I don't know why. If I were the teachers union, given the number of teachers that want to teach in charter schools, I'd say, sure, why not? Let's help everybody. Even the UFT actually runs a charter school. So they run one, and then they object to anybody else getting a chance to run one, which is...
That says a lot.
Well, whatever it is. I'm not here to criticize anybody, just point out the facts. The truth of the matter is the charter schools, not all of them have worked, but most of them have produced extraordinary results. The list of kids whose parents want them to go to charter schools is as far as the eye can see. And there are a handful of legislators who vote against charter schools, against parents, against giving parents a choice. And I just don't understand it. But I think thanks in particular, and credit really should go I'm pleased that the legislature, the Assembly, and the Senate passed, and the governor signed the bill authorizing another 100 charters, of which 50 will come to the city. But it was really the state Senate that carried the water in this one, and they were the ones that really stood up and, I think, in all fairness, deserve a little more credit. Everybody gets some, but they should get more to get us another 50 charter schools. Why we should have any limit, I don't know. And why they should be picked by Albany rather than the school's chancellor, you can't make this stuff up. The objections, you know, here we are trying to do things that the parents want, that have proven to work, and there are people that vote against it. And I said, and I mean this, I think we should go out and tell the voters in every district who stood up for giving parents choice, who's really trying to help the kids, and who is just trying to get some support from one organized group that may give them a little bit of money or stand up with them at the polls.
All right, before we go, open the phones after our next break at 1-800-848-WABC. This week there's been, and I've talked about it quite extensively here on this program, over in New Jersey, a question about the funding of pensions. Now, how does New York's funding of required pensions, whether it be teachers?
The good news is that the state legislature and the city administrations, this one and the past ones, I think have been very responsive. New York State's pension funds, my understanding, are well-funded. New York City's are certainly, I know from firsthand, are very well-funded. We have been responsible. Where we've not done the right thing is we have another kind of liability, and that's the liability of paying for health benefits for municipal workers after they retire. And the estimate is that we have a $50 billion liability. We have not funded that the way we fund our pension funds. It's even worse than what New Jersey does, because New Jersey, they underfund. Here, this is something that looks like a pension fund for all practical purposes. We don't fund it at all. Now, what we've done in this city has been responsible. We put two in our current budget calls for another half, $2.5 billion into a reserve towards the $50 billion liability, but it's going to depend on our successors to keep funding this until they get that up to having the same backing that our pension funds do. But our pension funds, when somebody retires from New York City, you can rest assured we've put away enough money with reasonable assumptions about where we invest it and what kind of returns so that the benefits that we promised and by law will have to provide are protected.
All right, real fast before we take the break, Peter King talked with him this week about the lawsuit trying to get the names of the passengers on the plane that took turned the imams in, or at least reported suspicious behavior. Everywhere we turn in New York City, somebody's telling us, if you see something, say something. If I've got a chance of being sued, I'm not going to tell you.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's no argument that I can think of where you would want to penalize somebody from, if they see something they think is dangerous, calling the appropriate authorities, turning it over to the appropriate authorities. Yes, you can't do it maliciously, and there should be some protection so you just don't go out, and if you don't like your neighbor, you say, oh, I'm going to turn him in. We don't want that. But we live in a very dangerous age, and you can't have people afraid to call 911 if they see something because they're worried about their documentation status. You can't have them call because they're worried about somebody quizzing them too much, and it'll destroy their reputation or their time will be taken away. We live in a world where we have to be able to have great first responders and great law enforcement at the federal level and at the state level and at the city level in particular. We have it here in the city, and we've got to make sure that people feel free to call the police department or 911 and say, look, I don't know, but I see this package. I don't know what's in it. It just looks suspicious. Or I overheard this. I don't know if it means anything. Or I saw some people carrying what looked to me like what guns or maybe who knows what else. And then leave it to the professionals. And then we have to have the world's greatest professionals well-trained to make sure that we protect people's rights. But 9/11 should have been a wake-up call to all of us. It's a different world, and I don't ever want a terrorist attack here.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, hang on. The questions from our listeners when we return at 77 WABC. It is your turn to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg, as it is each and every week, 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, we're going to start with Joe in New York. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
First of all, let me say I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
I have a lot of respect for you. And I just have a quick question when I feel is like the standards of the fire department being lowered. On the recent exam, there was like more than one correct answer for the entrance exam for firefighters. Also, I feel it's great for EMS workers to have the opportunity to come over to become firefighters, but they don't have to score a high mark on the written, and they don't have to. They can fail like three parts of the physical, and they go ahead of the rest of the public as a promotion exam.
All right, let's get the answer.
All right, John, I think there's a couple things here. Number one, we have some legal requirements to make sure that the tests are germane to the job. You can't have a test that keeps people out based on things that don't matter. Number two, what we've done is we hired an outside firm to get the best possible answer to what test is germane. And then, remember, we've doubled the length of time that the probies spend training. The first class that just went through, I think, had an extra 4 weeks. By the time we get done in the next class, the one after that, we will have doubled the amount of time. So what we're doing is focusing on training once we get them in the class, into the fire academy, much more than we did before. And we still want the best and the brightest. They have to be courageous. They have to be strong. They have to be intelligent. Nobody should think we're trying to dumb down anything. But you want people that can reason. And people talk about this multiple choice test. You know, a lot of the things we're facing in this world, there is no one right answer. You can go left or right. And maybe you could go both ways and still nobody's going to know which is the right way until you get to the other side of that door. So we need people that can think, and that's what the fire department's trying to do, to open it up. It is true we also do let you have a separate path. If you go through the EMS track, you can get higher on the list and get in, but the standards are no lower. It's just that you come with a few years of experience of EMS work, and remember, our firefighters are getting more and more of that kind of training because they get called to show up in emergencies other than just fires. They do a lot of things. They show up at accidents. They show up. People call the fire department when anything goes wrong, and they've got to be prepared for a more diverse kind of service needs than they did in the past, and I think we'd probably doing the right thing.
Interestingly enough, Mr. Mayor, we've got another question here from Jeffrey in Brooklyn about qualifications and the like. Jeffrey, get to the question very quickly, please, for time.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and John. I'm calling because I work in one of the CUNY colleges, so I see many students who are trying to get into police academy, fire academy, and I just see they just look to take any general courses just to get the 60 credits, but they don't actually look to get a degree and have more of an education that will help them on the job.
Well, I can just tell you,
problem.
John, I think they're hurting themselves. Anybody that doesn't understand, and we talked about this earlier in the program, you will make more money, you will have a better life, you'll be able to share in the American dream and use technology to better your life if you have more education. And if they're just going through the motions and taking basket weaving's the old joke, but, you know, a simple course just to get a college credit, it may be that the rules let them get away with it. But they're not kidding anybody but themselves. Long term, they'll look back and rue the day. They should have taken the toughest courses they could, courses that would be useful. I've always thought we should give our kids courses in accounting because they're going to have to run their own budgets and understand what their elected officials are doing. I've always thought kids should take courses in both in high school and in college. In the law, we live in a world of laws. They should take more science. We can't live in this world without understanding technology.
Mr. Mayor, as an example of that, look at the crisis with lower-income people and the mortgages that they've taken and the problems they've now faced with.
Absolutely. You've got to have a lot of compassion for them, but the truth of the matter is we should look at ourselves and say, you know, it's one thing I know that somebody wants to, all the elected officials want to say, well, let's come up with a program to bail them out. My first question is, what are we doing in our school system to make sure they don't make that, the next group of people don't make that mistake?
All right, Mr. Mayor, the music's up. We got to go. Thank you very much. The best of Passover, and we will talk next Friday.
And happy Passover, happy Easter to everybody.
Thank you very much. Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. Stick around. My friend Chris Wallace and you on the phones at WABC.